Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Sam, I'm not getting anything in my ISDN headset.
Who said they don't cry?
This is completely blanked out. Are we live? And welcome, everyone, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards, and here we are yet again. It is Saturday, June 20th, and we have got an outstanding program lined up for you tonight. As we come to you from AM 1380 WLRM Studios, that is our flagship station, and of course we are streaming live over the internet. Hello, hello.
Hello. Hey, how are you doing, James? Can you hear me? This is Keith Alexander. I'm co-hosting with James tonight, and one of the reasons I'm co-hosting is because our good friend and frequent guest, Roger Devlin, is calling in tonight. I'm familiar with and have basically put James on to Roger's writings in The Last Ditch and also in Occidental Quarterly and some other publications. Roger, how are you doing?
Hi there, Keith.
I understand that you're at a particular convention of conservatives that would probably be of interest to our listeners. Tell us all about that, please.
Yes. This is the American Cause, Pat Buchanan and Dave Buchanan's group. And they used to have these meetings just about every year, I think, but they had not had one for a little while, so they're finally getting them started up again. And we had a very fine conference here in Tyson's Corner, Virginia, with luminaries such as Tom Tancredo and Phyllis Schlafly and, of course, Pat Buchanan and Ward Connolly and Peter Brimelow. And great fun has been had by all.
Well, great. How long did that conference go on?
Well, it's a one-day conference. It started at 9 o'clock this morning. And talks went until about 5:30, and then we had supper and went on talking and conversing and meeting new people, making new friends for about 2 or 3 hours after that.
Well, I tell you, it's good to hear that we have conservative groups convening and sharing ideas, and this sounds like a particularly distinguished group. It seems to be the time of year for this type of thing. I know that James is planning to be at the Council of Conservative Citizens Conference in Jackson, Mississippi next week. Tell us about some of the topics that were discussed.
Well, let's see. There was a fine keynote address by an old Republican lion, Phyllis Schlafly. I'm sure you know she's been in the movement since...
Well, what did Phyllis talk about?
Campaign. Now, she just had hip surgery recently, but has come back from it wonderfully and gave a rousing keynote address about how the young people don't understand what socialism is and what the Cold War is about, and therefore they are supporting the Obama nation in vast numbers because they have not been taught properly.
you know, fellas, for some of our listeners who may not know, basically cut her teeth in the Goldwater campaign.
That's correct.
For presidency back in 1964 when Goldwater took on the Rockefeller Republicans, as they're called, the supporters of Nelson Rockefeller, at the nominating convention at the Cow Palace in San Francisco. And in, some people say that she actually won the nomination for Barry Goldwater by writing a pamphlet called A Choice, Not an Echo. Do you remember
Roger? Bobby Cannon was, in his introduction to Phyllis Schlafly, was telling us that Phyllis's book, A Choice, Not an Echo, has probably sold more than all of his books put together.
I've still got my copy, and I know that's where I first got involved in politics, in the Goldwater campaign. Fortunately, there aren't a lot of Goldwater veterans left in the paleoconservative movement. They seem to have been supplanted by neocons and the Rockefeller Republican contingent. But another thing of note about Phyllis Schlafly that we all owe her a debt of gratitude for is that she almost single-handedly engineered the defeat of the Equal Rights Amendment of the liberal feminists, which would have basically eliminated all gender distinctions in all regards had they been allowed to amend the Constitution as they had proposed to pass it. Do you remember that, Roger?
Oh, yes, I certainly do. We would have had women in combat and might have had gay marriage 30 years early, and probably there would have been an endless amount of litigation
cultural Marxist long march through the institution has gone through the courts and the legal system, and you know, Phyllis has written an article. She's kind of like you. She is focused on male-female relations and the you know, negative impact that liberalism has had on those things, like the birth rate, like the stability of marriages and things like that. In fact, she wrote an article that sounded like you could have authored it, Roger, recently called Why Women Are Unhappy. Did you happen to see that at her website?
I'll certainly take a look at it. I haven't read it, I don't believe.
Well, she, like you, points to some of the liberal initiatives that have helped make marriage less desirable and more fraught with peril now than they ever have been, things like the Violence Against Women's Act, for example.
Yes.
And, of course, being a lawyer myself, I have to cope with that occasionally. I see poor men that come in, and they're absolutely pressured into pleading guilty whenever the least little potentially violation comes up, like a domestic violence charge, because local law enforcement needs to show scalps on the belt in order to continue to get this bonanza of federal money that flows to local law enforcement under the Violence Against Women's Act to prosecute cases of domestic violence. They're certainly not going to get the money if they say thanks for the money, but we don't have a big domestic violence problem here. They have to show results. So any hapless male that happens to be ensnared in some type of trumped-up baloney charge is going to be under immense pressure. They will not plea bargain. They say things like, plead guilty and we won't fine you, we won't even charge you court costs, just plead guilty and it will be expunged. And then they find out, much to their chagrin, 5 years later, that they can't get a job with the government, they can't get a job on the railroad or the river, they can't get any number of jobs, because this is like the modern day scarlet letter. You cannot you know, it's the sin of all sins, I guess.
Essentially what they do is scare them by piling up potential charges. They say to men that we're going to put you on trial for 100 different violations unless you'll agree to a plea bargain guilty to one.
Yeah, well, I actually remember a case where a woman wanted to drop the charges, and the prosecutor and the judge were reluctant to do this, and the judge asked her, well, why did you call the police? This wasn't a case of domestic violence.
Chief, hold that talk. I'm back, everyone. Okay. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Yeah, I'm really here, everybody. Welcome back to the political cesspool radio program. James Edwards here with you. It's June 20th, Saturday night. Good to be back, by the way. I was out last week. My birthday's on Monday, and my wife and I took a short little weekend trip last week, and Bill Rowland and Winston Smith filled in more than dutifully. We are live this evening, as you can tell. I don't know, Keith, was it the Pony Express, through rain, through sleet, through snow? I don't know who that was. That's kind of like us. We had some major, major windstorms that hit Memphis last Friday, about 8 days ago, and it just brought a lot of havoc. Utilities were down, phone lines down, and unfortunately, our flagship station here, as you can tell, WLRM Studios, suffered in that Mother Nature fury as well. Some of our internet and ISDN connections are not working as good as they should, so we are working on that. That's why I was down that first 15 minutes. We're working on some connections here. But Roger Devlin, of course, our featured guest tonight, at least for the first hour. He is calling in live, as you know, from Tyson's Corner, Virginia. He is our on-the-ground correspondent from Pat Buchanan's 2009 American Cause Conference. Now, Roger also, even though he's all the way over there in the belly of the beast, the federal stronghold of D.C., even his landline from the Ritz-Carlton wasn't getting a good signal. So I think Roger is trying to call back in here. And until
I'm
then,
here.
Keith and I will hold court.
He's here now. I can hear.
All right, Roger. Roger is back. Roger,
yes.
Welcome back. We're just trying to catch up on the fly here in the cesspool.
Yeah.
Roger, I appreciate you and Keith holding court there for the first 15 minutes. Good stuff all the way around. Keith, I know before that last break, you were relaying to Roger a little war story, and I know you wanted to finish that thought.
Well, there's not much more to it. The wife was questioned by the judge in this domestic violence, domestic assault. It's a mainstay of municipal court and, you know, small misdemeanor court of criminal cases, and the judge, who was reluctant to dismiss the charges, said, well, if there wasn't domestic violence going on, why did you call in the first place? She said, I was having an argument with my husband, and he started winning, so I called the cops.
Oh, jeez.
Well, that's the way it goes sometimes. I tell you, Keith could tell you a lot of stories, ladies and gentlemen. I have the privilege of eating lunch with him at least once a week, and he's never short on things to talk about. But then again, neither are intellectual scholars like Roger Devlin either. But I know, Roger, you've got to have a lot of stories after spending the last several hours in the company of people like Pat Buchanan, Peter Brimelow, Ward Connerly, Phyllis Schlafly. The list goes on. I know you were covering some of the details of that during the opening minutes of the program tonight. What else is going on right now there?
Well, let's see. It's kind of winding down here now.
And you sound much better, by the way, Roger. I'm glad we're working through this.
Oh, good.
Keep going.
Okay. One of the most interesting presentations, it seemed to me, was from the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, Lou Barletta.
Absolutely. And remind Roger, if you will, who Lou Barletta is. Of course, he's very well known in our circles, but this guy is another man who is, I guess you could say, a hero. This is a guy who stood up and took the bullets and lived through it to tell the tale. He certainly has his share of scars.
Yes, he ran as a Republican in a heavily Democratic city, and he won 2-1 by a margin of 2-1, and by moving against illegal immigration, he made himself so popular that when he ran for re-election the second time, He got 90% of the vote in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Now, what he has done is to move against illegal immigration. There were a number of high-profile murders in the town of Hazleton committed by illegal aliens. And he moved not directly against the aliens, but against the landlords who rented to them and the employers who hired them. And he made an enormous difference.
Made very big news. I'm talking national headlines. This was back, year before last, if memory serves.
He says he went to Washington, and everybody was very nice to him and listened to him and patted him on the back and gave him a souvenir coffee mug, but did nothing for the town of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. So after, you know, the third or fourth murder, he decided that he had to do anything that he could, that it was his responsibility as a local leader to protect the local population. And so he did that, and naturally there was an enormous reaction from the ACLU and the Puerto Rican Legal Defense Fund. They tried to destroy him. They tried to present him with so many lawsuits that he would have spent his life trying to defend himself against this. But he got contributions from all over the country, which enabled his city government to carry on the legal fight. And so far, it's working.
Well, that's an encouraging story to be sure, and we need hope and encouragement in these dark days for paleoconservatism at least. Ladies and gentlemen, we are on the line now with Roger Devlin. He is a PhD and independent scholar and author, as well as a contributor to publications such as the Occidental Quarterly, which is, of course, the premier journal of Western thought, as well as other online outlets. Dr. Devlin has been on this program several times in the past, as have many of the speakers there at the American College Conference, from which Dr. Devlin is reporting live from at this moment. Now, Roger, you're very well familiar with the guest list of the Political Cesspool Radio program. Pat Buchanan's been on this show a couple of times. Babe Buchanan's been on. Some of the other people there have been on as well, such as Peter Brimelow. Were there any faces in the crowd that our audience might know there at the Ritz-Carlton this afternoon?
Let's see. If you read Talkie Mag, you probably have heard of Richard Spencer and Tom Piatak. They were both here. And
absolutely.
Let's see. The founding editor of Occidental Quarterly, Kevin Lamb, was reporting on it. Taking photographs of everyone.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, Tom Tancredo was there as well, the former United States Congressman from Colorado, Republican. And, you know, Tancredo is one of the few guys who came out and really hit back hard against the nomination of Sonia Sotomayor. He did not mince words, and I think that's what the Republican Party is in desperate need of right now. Unfortunately, Tom Tancredo is no longer in Congress. He did not seek reelection back in November of 2008, but that was another big headliner there at the conference. And, of course, as Roger just mentioned, even in the in the crowd, there were a lot of who's who of the conservative right. What was really, Roger, the overall purpose of this conference? Was it just to gather people together and raise a few bucks and hear some speeches about issues that we already know about, or do you think something more positive will come of it?
Well, there was no fundraising, I have to say that. I think Pat's finally finished running for president. But the idea, the title of the conference was actually Building the New American Majority. Figuring out how to essentially recreate the Reagan coalition or something like it. Reagan got elected when a lot of the George Wallace Democrats began voting Republican, and it's possible that we could bring about something like that again by appealing to what are commonly called social issues, really moral issues, which appeal powerfully to the working class, to the white working class, and even other Democrats.
Well, you know, you bring up the Reagan coalition, and that the purpose of this conference was in perhaps some way breathe life into that again. I was looking at Pat's website today, and I saw the graphic there of the electoral landslide that Reagan-Bush won over Ferraro, what was it, 525-13? I mean, the Republicans couldn't dream of it winning again, much less winning like that, unless they reversed their neoconservative course, and maybe,
right.
just maybe, you never know. You never know where positive things will come from. Maybe this conference will do something to spur some action, at least in perhaps some of the membership. I know, Roger, you're doing great work, that's for sure, and you were there. We're going to talk more about it when we come back. Set tight, everybody.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right. Welcome back to the show. James Edwards with you. I think we have finally gotten everything back to full strength here at the studios. We appreciate everyone suffering through those first few minutes with us when the connections were still a little bit rocky. But you know what? That's why this show is so endearing to everyone. That's why you love us so much and have allowed us to grow so much, is because we are live. We are real. We don't have any false pretensions. This, what we are is what you get here in the political cesspool. There are no characters. There are no aliases. It's 100% live, raw radio, and that's what you deserve. And we are here to tell you the truth, and we're telling you the truth right now with my co-host for the first hour, Keith Alexander, and, of course, our featured guest and dear friend, Dr. F. Roger Devlin. Keith, I know you're a big fan of Roger's. He's done a lot of great work, and even though he's on right now to be our correspondent from Pat Buchanan's American Calls Conference, when Roger's normally on, he talks about some issues that you're very much interested in. Am I right, Keith?
Yes. Roger kind of expands the boundaries for a lot of people of conservative and liberal discourse by showing how liberalism has affected, I guess, for lack of a better term, male-female relations in America, how it's made marriage more perilous and therefore less popular, how liberalism is behind, for example, the declining birth rates that we suffer in America, the increased divorce rate, and basic dissatisfaction that we have in male-female relations. Is that a fair statement, Roger?
Yes, yes, thank you. Unfortunately, I cannot hear you very well now. I think I got most of what you were saying.
He was just saying how great you are,
yeah.
Roger. You needn't worry yourself about the details, so we'll just move on.
I tell you what, why don't you, James, since he seems to be hearing you better, why don't you take it over?
Well, just sit tight, Keith, because I'm going to be going back to you for some thoughts and some questions and comments as well.
Right.
But basically, Roger, Keith was just offering the audience a synopsis or a recap, if you will, about what you've discussed on this program in previous appearances. And then, of course, we were reminding them that you are on now to report from the American Calls Conference. I was just thinking another gentleman that was there, another guy who has appeared on this program at least a half dozen times, if memory serves, is former editor of Forbes magazine, editor of VDare.com, and, of course, the iconic book on immigration, Alien Nation. That is Peter Brimelow. What was his speech about?
Yes.
What was Peter there to talk about, Roger?
He told us, he shared with us his evaluation that George W. Bush was the worst president in American history. I'm not sure whether W is going to keep that honor for very many more years. And he reminded us that U.S. politics is highly volatile and things can change very quickly. Nobody expected there to be such a popular revolt against the idea of amnesty in 2007. And he also mentioned that what the Republican Party needs to do is to appeal to the working man on the basis of nationality, to appeal to the working man's patriotism, and that would probably be more effective than trying to offer more goodies and so forth in the way that the Democrats tried to do.
Well, let me ask you this, Roger, and again, it sounds as though that speaking Roger there at the American Calls Conference, which by all indications was a smash success, was a who's who of the political cesspools guest list. But one person that I think should have been on that podium and wasn't was you yourself, Roger. Had you been given the opportunity to make a speech, what would you have added to the equation there?
Oh, I don't know. I am not really a Washington watcher, I have to say that. I was impressed by the number of statistics that some of these speakers were able to reel off. And Peter Brimelow, for example, was telling us that 80% of the American population is in favor of making English an official language.
Mm-hmm.
And he also says there have been 20 cases in recent years of what at VDARE they call immigrant mass murder syndrome. It's in the last 7 or 8 years, it's claimed the lives of over 200 people. He's thinking of things like the Virginia Tech massacre, right, or the one in at the employment center in Binghamton, New York, recently, where a Vietnamese man opened fire. There have been quite a few cases of this. It has not gotten into the national press because it does not fit their worldview. They're talking about it at VDARE, but not much of any place else.
Well, you can't do much better than VDARE as far as I'm concerned, particularly when you're dealing with the immigration issue, and I encourage everyone to check them out at VDARE.com. But, you know, and I remember that Virginia Tech case vividly. That happened in the middle of April 07, if I'm not mistaken. We were doing our Confederate History Month series, and we postponed one of our scheduled guests to have Larry Pratt on from the Gun Owners of America, who came on right after he was on Fox News to come on the political cesspool to offer us some statistics, because, of course, the government wanted to use that as a example of why we should all surrender our right to bear arms, and Larry Pratt had done a good job. Not to chase a rabbit, but you mentioned it, and I have some, not fond memories of the shootings, but of what we were doing to fight back against the liberal onslaught that came afterwards. But Keith, let me ask you this. I just asked Roger, and I think it's always fun to play these games from time to time. You'd been on the stage, Keith. What would you have been talking about?
Well, I think I would have talked about some of the same type of things that Roger would have talked about how liberalism is affecting every aspect of our life in popular culture, and, for example, the sports that we watch, how it affects marriage and child rearing and things like that across the board. That's, you know, people don't seem to understand that liberalism, at least in my opinion, is the modern face of evil, and that just about every societal problem that has cropped up over the past 60 years can be tracked back to liberalism. You know, the drug culture, the sexual revolution, the decline in quality of public education, none of these was caused or was the pet project of the John Birch Society. Everything has come from the political left. And for some reason, it's just like what you and Roger were just talking about these immigrant killing sprees that we've had. You may hear about them in the mainstream media, but they never connect the dots and say this is a consequence of open borders and illegal immigration, which is being not only tolerated, but basically sponsored by the political left.
Well, Keith, you know, and I want to go quickly back to Roger on this, but Keith, you have written about and spoken about many times on this program about the red state versus blue state mentality. Roger mentioned a few moments ago that one of the purposes of this conference was to, I guess, reaffirm the Reagan coalition, and we were talking about the landslide victory that the Republicans won, in which they carried every state except for Minnesota and the District of Columbia, when it was Reagan-Bush versus Mondale and Ferraro. You look at the map there, red state America was all of America, including California, New York, and everywhere in between. And it seems as though now, Keith, that the Republicans are pandering to everyone except the red state conservative voters. And I think that should have been a message, and perhaps it was, that was delivered there. If the red state America is ever going to prevail again, there needs to be some sort of political organization or party that is reaching out and going for these voters. They are homeless right now, Roger.
That's right. A lot of people have this superficial view that the way for a party to become the majority is to concentrate on the kind of middle-of-the-road, wishy-washy people who don't have any kind of clear principles. But the truth is that constantly moving towards the center ends up really discouraging the best elements in the Republican Party. And you can get people fired up by sending a clear message and not really making any unnecessary concessions to the enemy. That's what rallies people. That's what makes them come out and vote for you.
Well, you mentioned, obviously, this is Pat Buchanan's conference. It's the American Cause conference. Pat never is going to be president, and that wasn't because of my vote, because I voted for him. But the last time I really saw a candidate that I was excited for in the Republican Party was 1996 when he was running and winning for a short time against Bob Dole. They don't make Republicans like that anymore. This was a guy that was speaking directly to the Republican base and only to the Republican base.
Yes.
They need more Pat Buchanans in the Republican Party, and I'm sorry that, you know, as great as Pat is, and he's still doing a lot of good work, do not get me wrong, but unfortunately his time as a candidate has passed. But do you think, Roger, that the Republicans will ever re-embrace that sort of ideology, that hardcore America First mentality that is seen in people like us and Buchanan?
The consensus at the conference seems to be that if we can fire the base up, leaders will appear. Nobody seems to know who is today a worthy successor of Pat Buchanan.
Sit tight, Roger. Got to go one more break. We'll be back with more in a minute.
All right.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards here with you on the Liberty News Radio Network. This is the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Keith Alexander is co-hosting with me during this first hour. And, of course, we have been joined for the last 45 minutes and for at least the next 15 by Dr. F. Roger Devlin. He is giving us a live report from the scenes on the ground at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Tyson's Corner, Virginia, from Pat Buchanan's American Cause Conference. And I'm going to go back to Roger in just a moment. But before I do, Keith, I know you wanted to add a few final thoughts on how the Red State Reagan coalition could be re-energized.
Well, you asked me before what I would have talked about had I been a speaker at the conference, and I think now that I have had some chance to reflect upon it, what I would focus on is that this difference, this change in the Republican Party that we would like to change back from, is actually a manifestation of the fissure that's existed in American political life since the 1820s and the end of the era of good feelings, and that is the red state, blue state fissure. Basically, blue state America is a projection into the present day of abolitionist, Unitarian, Transcendentalist New England and their thought patterns, while red state America is Southern and Southern-minded of people. It's basically a projection into the present day of the mindset of the old Confederacy. And basically, the Republican Party was at its strongest when it gave voice to the red state American outlook. And I think that the Republican Party has intentionally marginalized and disenfranchised red state America. Look at its presidential nomination process, for example. They have all the early primaries in blue states like Iowa, Michigan, and New Hampshire, and they make them winner-take-all affairs so that what happens is that by the time the South and the rest of red state America has its say, the candidate of the Republican Party has been virtually selected. And we hear advice like, you know, don't throw your vote away by voting for this person. You've got to limit yourself to one of these two or three blue state Americans like Romney or McCain or someone else of that ilk. And that's, you know, I don't think that's an action. I think that's intentional. And red state America needs to gain hold of the reins of the Republican Party, or else the Republican Party is doomed.
Well, and Roger brought up a very good point. I think it was a point made at the conference itself. Leaders will emerge if the people demand that they do. If the people rise up and start a movement, people, it's unfortunate that it should be this way. But I guess that's the way it is. Power sort of has its own
dynamic.
Force of gravity. Yeah, I mean, it pulls people in. And unfortunately, these so-called leaders aren't going to be touting the paleoconservative line until paleoconservatism offers them a pathway to success. And it used to, and it can again, I think, because, as you mentioned, Roger, still, these issues are very popular amongst the people. You know, 80% were in you were mentioning one of our issues that the people are in favor of, 80% plus. And I think there's many issues like that, except the media skews them, and then there's a lot of ways that they get distorted, and unfortunately people back away. One of those people who didn't do that was Congressman Tom Tancredo, and I know, Dr. Devlin, you wanted to mention what were the tenets of his speech.
Yes, he had had some interesting stories. He likes to use the expression, the perversity of diversity.
See, that's what I'm talking about. That's something everyone can understand. You know, and it's blasphemy. It's, you know, that's blasphemy in the eyes of the false gods of cultural Marxism. But this is a guy, you can't get more mainstream than a United States congressman, and he's speaking our language.
He cannot speak on college campuses. He was we were talking about how do you get the message out, and Tom said, I go to college campuses and they have a riot.
And this is a guy, again, ladies and gentlemen, a United States congressman who's getting thrown out of colleges, physically assaulted by Marxist thugs. And, of course, Keith, again, as we've seen here in Memphis when we've held demonstrations and rallies and conferences, the police really don't enforce the law unless it is conservatives acting a fool, which very rarely happens.
Yeah, basically what happens is that there's a double standard, and the left, you know, well, just look at it. For example, you know, being a left-wing activist in America is the golden road to fame and fortune. Look at people like Bill Ayers and Bernadette Dorn in the positions that they hold, and think of somebody that has a criminal record of activism on the right that would be an alternative, and see if you can find anybody that would fit that description that has a tenured position at a large state university and basically writes programs and copy and sets principles and programs for the education of America's youth.
Well, you know, it's funny.
Like Bill Ayers,
William Ayers.
It's crazy.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should mention that, because the closest we would have to that is Professor Kevin McDonald, who coincidentally is going to be on this show in about 10 minutes. But other than that, yeah, there's a big void there that needs to be filled because, as you mentioned, Roger, and as was impressed upon the audience there at the conference, a lot of our ideas are still mainstream in terms of their acceptance upon amongst the people.
Absolutely. I was especially struck by Ward Connerly's speech in this regard. His move to ban racial preferences, it's written in language almost identical to the Civil Rights Act of 64. It passes by majorities of no less than 55 to 45. In California, Proposition 209 passed 55 to 45. In Washington State, I think it was 59 to 41. There were similar results in Michigan and Nebraska. And yet, he tried to get the Congress to talk about it when Gingrich was the speaker. And I'll tell you what happened. Gingrich referred him to J.C. Watts. And J.C. Watts claimed that we couldn't challenge racial preferences yet because he gets pulled over by the police.
Yeah. Well, J.C. Watts is about as a Republican as Barack Obama is. All of these so-called black Republicans, they all voted for the Democratic nominee last
Colin
year.
Like Powell.
Colin Powell. Absolutely. But you know, this is what I'm talking about. Roger, you're bringing it up again. What Ward Connolly did there was nothing short of, I say miraculous. It's not miraculous that it passed because it's a common sense initiative, and most conservatives are common sense thinking people, but it passed. And victories,
3-1.
You know,
in opinion polls, it's 3-1. Disapproving racial preferences.
Well, this is something that the Republican Party, this should be their signature issue. Issues like this should be their signature issue, and they would win in landslides. But
And he says that he has the strongest opposition from within the Republican Party.
Oh, I believe
him. Outside it.
And you know, who's going to vote for a Republican Party that is offering watered-down versions of Democratic ideas? You know,
I think that's right. I think the Republicans' best voters are just staying home in disgust.
Well, yeah,
let me add this, because I remember this specifically. Ward Connerly even admitted that the success of his state of Michigan initiative, the Civil Rights Initiative there, would not have made it without the help of the local branch, the Michigan branch of the Council of Conservative Citizens. But in his most recent attempts, he basically lost on 3 out of 4 states, including Missouri, and he specifically turned down the help, the offered help, of the Council of Conservative Citizens in Missouri, which, of course, is where the council is headquartered. So, see, that's a problem. We've got to get conservative groups together and, you know, realize that we're not the enemies, the liberals are the enemy.
Well, that's a long-standing problem in conservatism. The only people we like fighting more than our enemies is each other, and that's, I guess, something indicative of European-American peoples. But anyway, Roger, listen, this hour has gone by far too quickly. You've done such a great job reporting live from the scene there, and we appreciate you doing that. This has certainly been a treat. Obviously, a lot of people there at that conference, both on the podium or behind the podium and in the audience, are friends of this program, people who have been on this show or people who listen to this show. And it's just exciting to be able to hear firsthand, mere minutes after this convention concluded, what happened there. And you enabled us to have that sort of insight. Roger, we only have a couple of minutes before we got to go to our break and into the national news, and then we'll come back with Kevin McDonald. A final thought, Roger, anything you'd like to add to the mix that you haven't been asked yet, or something that really stood out before we run out of time?
Well, I'll tell you a story that I'll close with a story that Tom Tancredo told. He got quoted as saying that Miami was a third world place, and he was pilloried in the press about this. And a local Cuban American leader was quoted as saying against him that the good thing about Miami is that there is no pressure there to be American.
Yeah, I believe it.
he's also done some good work, Tancredo, in attacking Sotomayor, who was a real diversity baby. He made the point that she would have been rejected from any jury in the United States for admitting racial bias, and she has said that. She has said that her legal view is shaped by her being a Latina.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about that so much on this program, and again, Newt Gingrich did it for a couple of days until they were able to silence him, and I'm sure that didn't take much arm twisting because he is a neocon, let's face it.
Yeah.
But yet, there was Tancredo standing alone. Of course, Buchanan was doing it too, and some of the other conservative pundits, but among the mainstream elected officials, there was only Tancredo, and this is something that the Republicans should have been hammering on. Listen, I don't see any difference between these two parties. We got to go to break. Roger Devlin, Keith Alexander, thank you so much for what you've done during this hour. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Stay tuned, everybody.
Take care.
In the First Self-Righteous Church, in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula, it was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.